Welcome to the ABHA Listen and Learn Podcast, where we discuss the latest issues related to hearing and balance healthcare. And now, here are your hosts, Dr. Dana Day and Dr. Susan Schmidt.
Hello, I'm Dr. Dana Day.
And I am Dr. Susan Schmidt, and welcome to the ABHA Listen and Learn Podcast, hosted by Arizona Balance and Hearing. This is where we discuss all the latest and all the greatest advances in testing and treatment of all hearing and balance issues.
Education is at the heart of our core values at ABHA, one Dr. Schmidt and I take very seriously, the education of both ourselves and mostly for our patients. This is why we are here today.
And to that end, if anyone who is listening has any specific questions you would like answered on this podcast, please go to questions@arizonabalance.com. That's questions@arizonabalance.com. And we will be sure to answer them in one of our upcoming podcasts. Also, don't forget to click subscribe so you don't miss any of our future episodes.
Well, it's May. And in Phoenix, Arizona, that means we are approaching triple digits. And I am just not quite ready for the heat. But then I say that every year.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you, Dr. Schmidt, are really not ready because you're not a warm-weathered person, though you live in the desert.
Right. But I don't get hot either. So it's actually a good thing.
Oh, okay.
I prefer the cold weather. However, when it's 90 or 100, I'm still good.
Oh, okay. That's great.
Yeah.
So when all of us are suffering, you're like, yeah, oh, well.
Exactly. We just had our AC repaired yesterday or replaced, and the guy's like, hey, I can put it down to 77, 75, 60, whatever. I'm like, how about 87? Sounds better to me. So,
well, I'm glad you got it repaired, especially before the triple digits do hit.
Exactly.
Well, I know I'm kind of late to the party here, but I wanted to congratulate the director, producer, and writer of Coda for winning the Oscar for Best Picture and Troy, co-star, for Best Supporting Actor. For those who might not have heard of Troy, he is from Mesa, Arizona. And even in his acceptance speech, he did a shout-out and thanked his hometown of Mesa, Arizona. So I thought that was really neat. He noted that one of his a list of greatest supporters was his hometown. So that's really wonderful. And awesome. It was a great movie. Susan, have you been able to see it yet?
I have not. I'm the last person to probably see any movies. So not on my radar yet.
Uh-huh. Well, if for those of you that haven't seen the movie, it is great, and I really encourage you to watch it. I'm not going to spoil any part of the movie, but I did want to let you know what CODA stands for, and CODA stands for or means Child of Deaf Adult, for those that maybe do not know, and mm-hmm. So that kind of gives a little idea of maybe what the movie's about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because last year we reviewed, if you will, kind of the merits of Sound of Metal, all which right. was about a drummer who becomes deaf all of a sudden in the movie, and then it kind of his journey to going through that stage, implantation, cochlear implants, and on and on. But what strikes me is, wow, 2 years in a row, isn't this really neat that they're mm-hmm. representing the deaf community? And just disabilities in general are making it onto the big screen. And I think that's really, really wonderful because it's a more clear picture of who we are in the United States and around the world.
Right. And with Sound of Metal, since I've only seen that one so far, but they portray the actor's experience from losing the hearing loss. Mm-hmm. And so they actually, you get a feel for what that would feel like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So other movies give you a feel of, you know, different things, but this, from that perspective, it was quite powerful, the way that they edited it and thoughtful, you know, thought about, okay, how would we make other people understand what this feels like?
Yeah, it was. It was pretty impactful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, two great movies, and again, congratulations to Coda. I was so thrilled to see that it got one for Best Picture. Was one of our favorites. We, a group of us in our neighborhood, did movie nights, and we watched Best Pictures, and that came out to be actually the favorite of all of ours. So that was really neat, and we love the fact that Troy's character, and he is deaf, could make you laugh without saying a word, and it was pretty funny going through all those emotions. So.
Okay. Great.
So here we are. It's May, and we are celebrating May is Better Hearing Month. Actually, May is Better Speech and Hearing Month, but since we are audiologists, Dr. Schmidt and I, and deal mainly with hearing, we kind of drop the expressive speech part and focus more on the brain process of speech. Mm-hmm. So we kind of say Better Hearing Month. Today, we want to emphasize why you need to treat your hearing loss today instead of years from now. So, I know we've mentioned this before, but for those listeners that haven't heard us say this, on average, a person waits 7 or more years to treat their hearing loss. We used to believe that it wasn't any big deal, but now the advances and what we're learning about the brain and being able to measure how the brain is functioning, we now have a different urgency in treating our hearing loss.
Mm-hmm.
What we do know today is that we have pathways that go from ear to brain. We can measure how the sound is being sent to the brain on some of our routine testing that we do on an everyday basis. We know if the different parts of the hearing system are strong enough to feed the brain the needed information, or if the signal is weak, it's distorted or not present. So this is kind of a complicated theory, not theory, but process, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about all of this information, basically what we're saying is we know more than we did, gosh, 5 years ago, right?
Right.
And now we know that the brain organizes sound, and it processes that based on that organization. But if it's not getting the full impact of the sound, then there is difficulty with that organization, or even just the comprehension of that sound coming in.
Right. Uh-huh. Exactly. So so there's two systems at work. So that there's the ear to the brain system, and that's what we are partially trying to treat. But on the flip side of that, people don't realize, is we have pathways in the brain that feed from our brain back down. So it's a top-down processing. And that's really where the magic happens, okay, mm-hmm. in the brain. This is what we're working for, is mm-hmm. the brain, okay? So we want that to work as best as it can. So what we know now is that the experiences that we have with sound throughout our lives shapes how our brain works,
mm-hmm.
okay? So in a research setting, we can use functional MRIs. We can use electroencephalograms, EEGs, or we can use, and probably other things too, but we can use a frequency following response, which is an FFR. which is, I think, the newest, latest, greatest way of looking at how the brain processes sound. So in all our research studies, you'll see, we used fMRI, we used EEG, we used FFR. So they all have their merits, but they all look at the brain in different ways.
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what's interesting about the FFR is that it kind of works as a recorder. Okay, so we play a sound into the ears. The ears feeds the sound to the brain, and using this FFR technique, we can actually record how the brain hears that sound. Okay, so it's kind of like back in the day. they used to have cassette tapes. If you don't know what those are, Google them. Okay. So they had cassette tapes, and we listened to the radio. Okay. And if you had a cassette tape player on your radio, then if you heard a song, you could record that song onto a cassette tape on the radio. Mm-hmm. Okay. And play it back over and over again. It was, you know, a miraculous kind of technology at the time. So super cool. And that's what the FFR does. So we hear a sound, we hear a song, we hear speech, whatever we hear, we can record that response from the brain. And it's really miraculous to play it back and listen to everybody's recording. Okay. Mm-hmm. 'Cause everybody has a different representation of how the sound is. So if you listen to, you know, a passage of a song or a speech or something like that, and we record it back, each brain will sound different. Okay. Each brain has its own little fingerprint, if you will. All different, one from another. It's based on how we have heard sound in the past, what type of sounds, you know, it just shapes our brain so that everybody's brain is unique. And so it's really seriously a pretty cool way of, you know, looking at the brain and listening to the different ways that the brain will hear a sound when you expect it to be like, you know, a full representation of the sound, or is there some background noise intermixed in it, so you can visually and auditorily see all of these changes. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool. Another example of that would be, everybody might remember the Yanny versus Laurel controversy.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Robin, do you remember that?
Not really. Oh, Fill me in.
Oh, my goodness.
Fill me in.
Even I heard about it, and I don't hear about a lot of things. So I don't know. It must be
it's
a
It's the
year.
Auditory version of the dress.
Oh, okay.
So there was a recording, and people would hear this recording, and some people would hear Yanny, and some people would hear Laurel. Two totally different sounds.
Mm-hmm. Isn't one male and one female?
No, it was just a recorded voice.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, yeah. I'm a little confused.
You'll have to look it up.
Yeah, now I'm going to have to.
Okay. So when you hear the recording, you initially hear one of those usually. Sometimes some people heard of a mix. But I heard Yanny. How about you, Dana?
I heard Laurel.
Okay. Okay, of course you did.
And I am clueless.
Okay. But this is an example of how each person's brain's processing is different. Okay. So we all have our fingerprint of how we process sounds. So that's an example. But what's interesting is that if you use our top-down processing, you can change that, okay? Mm-hmm. So if you hear that sound clip again, and I heard Yanny all the time, Yanny, Yanny, Yanny. But then if I thought the word Laurel, or I looked at the word Laurel while they were playing it, I heard Laurel.
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's your brain having an influence on what you hear. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that is that top-down processing that we're trying to describe here. So it it does affect the way you hear sounds in real life.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And one of the things that I like about the FFR is it is what we call an evoked potential, but it's the only one right now that is a speech stimulus. So we are looking, all the others are clicks and tones and tone bursts and all these different things, but this is a speech signal. So it tells us what how the brain is reacting to that sound. And then it helps us in, for some, those that need it, how to best provide therapy mm-hmm. or treatment. And again, that's that top-down model that it kind of gets lost sometimes in how we approach individuals that are struggling, either with hearing or understanding speech or, you know, just speech delays, speech and noise, all those different things. We kind of miss that part. We think that it all goes bottom up to the brain. Right. And, you know, it's kind of that information highway that we've talked about before mm-hmm. and those nerves. You know, it has to go both ways.
Exactly.
And some people forget that it has to, you know, come back down.
Come
yes. back down.
Yes. Yes. And even audiologists.
Yes.
you know, sometimes we forget about that, you know, important processing of what, you know, what is the sound doing once it gets up there? Mm-hmm. And so we mentioned before, back in like 2014-15, Anu Sharma's group of University of Colorado did research that showed brain reorganization in deaf individuals versus hearing individuals. Okay, so some of these participants obviously had the capability of using that bottom-up processing, and some didn't. Those deaf individuals did not. So we could see definitely the difference in those two groups as far as the processing and how the brain processes speech. So the reorganization is there. What happens is that, you know, sometimes the visual system comes into play plus other types of processing as well to make up for the lack of the auditory processing. Mm-hmm. So what they found that was interesting was even in the beginning stages of hearing loss, the brain would start to reorganize.
Yes.
So the mm-hmm. beginning stages, which is pretty shocking to probably them and to all of us, because you know, somebody comes in and we know you, how you have a little bit of hearing loss.
Yeah, let's wait a year and see.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a lot of times the mantra that we would give. We don't anymore, but that was it. And you may even still hear it or believe it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I hear that all the time. Oh, they told me it was no big deal. Okay. So the goal in the future is to have these brain assessments performed on a daily basis to show that the auditory brain is shrinking or changing and other areas are trying to compensate. So I think that, you know, do you hear the beeps? Yes, no, okay, that's all well and good, but I think we're sort of past that now, and mm-hmm. we really want to see, is the brain starting to change? How is that change in the bottom-up processing affecting the top-down processing now? I think that's what's more important.
Totally agree. So mentioned on our podcast before that one of my areas of interest is auditory processing disorders, and whether that's something that you have as a young child or acquire due to circumstances beyond your control, mm-hmm. maybe a concussion or an accident. And I do FFR on all of these, and it is, I can't wait to be able to start doing it on our hearing impaired, and then prior to fittings and then after fittings, because with the FFR, we have seen that through increasing that top-down model and with through therapy or hearing devices or technology or whatever, that we actually see a change. And Dr. Sharma's study has also shown the same thing. So I think you're absolutely right. I think raising your hand when you hear the beeps is going to be obsolete. If for nothing else, it will be used to program hearing aids just simply because that's the algorithm that they use at this particular time. But I suspect that's going to change as well. Mm-hmm. As we become more and more knowledgeable on what the brain is doing with sound, right, and how it's processing it. So mm-hmm. I totally agree. So let's go back. So it's 7 years. If someone notices a change in hearing 7 years ago, the changes in the brain, they've already happened.
Of course.
It isn't like you have to wait 7 years and then the brain starts to change.
Right.
We're seeing it starts to change. Even at that mild hearing loss, that no big deal, you know, hearing loss. So now the brain has had 7 years of receiving bottom-up information and steadily has begun to reorganize, as we have found in these studies.
Right.
This is not ideal.
No.
It is just not ideal. And it is not the original design and change. In this case, it is not optimal and can cause brain issues. So what do we mean by brain issues? It can cause difficulty in noise.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the big one. So your favorite restaurant is no longer your favorite restaurant because you cannot hear your wife or husband anymore from across the table, or you can't order without making a mistake, or you hear something different, etc. Some other things that might be going on is you're misrepresenting, or your brain is not hearing phonemes properly. So you consistently substitute an F like Frank for an S like Sam.
Mm-hmm.
So words don't make sense or sentences don't make sense. And this all comes from this reorganization because the auditory cortex and the part of the brain that takes in auditory information is shrinking. And it's not getting the information it needs to maintain its level of competency, if you will, or comprehension.
Right.
And so we talk a lot about the link between dementia and untreated hearing loss. And just as a quick reminder, the number one modifiable risk factor for developing dementia is treating your hearing loss, even your mild hearing loss. Again, that goes back to this reorganization of the brain and this takeover, if you will, of the real estate of the brain by the visual and somatosensory organs, or somatosensory is touch, feel, mm-hmm. anything like that. So I've said it before and I'll say it again. If you picked up the newspaper and couldn't read the newspaper, you'd start with probably putting what they call cheaters, you know, little magnifying glasses on, right? And then once that didn't work, you would go get your eyes checked. And then you get your eyes checked, and they'd say, you need glasses. And you say, okay, I'll get glasses. You go down the road, and you can't read the signs. You don't call that Department of Transportation and tell them, your signs are bad. You need to change your signs. You need to make them different. But if you can't hear someone, it's because they're mumbling, or they need to talk louder, or they don't have anything interesting to say.
Right.
So the whole perception of treating hearing loss needs to change. It needs to change from the professional perspective in that, no, waiting a year really isn't a good option.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs to change from the public perception, in my opinion, because 7 to 10 years is way too long. The damage is done. Can it be reversed? Possibly. That's what they're working on now.
Right.
The studies are showing that. But how? I mean, you're dealing, it's an uphill battle where it could have been easily remedied very quickly. if we would have started at the beginning.
Right, seamless. So, mm-hmm. you know, you want that bottom-up processing to continue to be active and efficient, and we don't want to disrupt that. Okay, so so again, that would be a very good reason why to treat your hearing loss now and not later. Okay. Also, we've talked a lot about tinnitus, that ringing or noise that you have in your head, and how treating your hearing loss can decrease the experience of tinnitus. So when done right, the option of hearing technology to treat hearing loss will decrease tinnitus perception. And when I did my study, I found that 95% of those patients in my 2020 study, they did have a dramatic reduction in their tinnitus, 95% of them. Mm-hmm. Is that the only problem with tinnitus patients? Probably not. There's different generators of tinnitus. So that's why in the 2021 study, I found the combination of treating the hearing loss and treating the brain and the emotional system gave even better results to decrease the tinnitus mm-hmm. over time. Mm-hmm. And so for tinnitus, the same thing is true. You really don't want to just let it go, okay? Right. If it's bothering you, there's something going on, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. So we really want to address that. So the brain works in a whole entity and not in isolation. So it works with other systems such as our other senses, like touch or other symptoms, such as our emotional system, and they're all processed together to contribute to what somebody is perceiving. And sometimes all of those together give us a perception of tinnitus, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Okay. So in that respect, it might be actually be better if our brain could be segmented and we could just say, okay, I'm going to turn this part off right now because this is happening, but we can't do that. Okay. But with each study, we get more and more knowledge about why tinnitus is being generated in some brains but not others. But if you look at all the studies on tinnitus and the generators of tinnitus, there's a lot of them. And they look at, you know, their results based on the fMRI and the EEG and the FFR potentially. So what they're looking at is a little bit different for different studies. But all in all, the answer to the tinnitus right now is there's no miracle cure for mm-hmm. tinnitus. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that it goes back to the brain and, to find out which systems are involved in the tinnitus perception is very, very difficult at this mm-hmm. time.
Right.
Okay. So it might be a little bit of this, it might be a little bit of this, and it might be a little bit of this, and it all combines and gives you that perception. So I think that is the difficulty with tinnitus. But you have to remember, each brain has its own fingerprint of processing sound as a baseline. And, you know, life happens, there's noise, there's medical issues, there's hearing loss, there's anxiety, just to name a few, and that all wraps up into your perception of tinnitus, okay? But again, we treat what we can and what we know. So if we know that the hearing system is impaired, we really have to treat that, okay? Mm-hmm. That is essential to making that system work, okay? When that system starts working better, or actually in tandem, we work at other things too that we know are causing the tinnitus in somebody's life, okay? We just don't want to wait forever. So we want to get that started quickly as well.
Right, right. So we can't, again, take away tinnitus completely and forever for most patients, but we can treat the tinnitus over time to decrease its presence and annoyance and try to prevent it from escalating in the future.
Yes.
It is important to treat tinnitus as soon as possible, to start pushing it in the background of our awareness before we let it get out of control. So again, when something, tinnitus is a neural consequence of hearing loss, but it can be other things as well. So when we hear it, the first thing we probably do is say, oh, I'm going to the doctor, or something's happening. And we want you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But once they've ruled out that it's not something life-threatening and we need to go to treating it. Because if it is there, your attention goes to the noise and not to everything else. And that's what we mean by, you know, just trying to get control over its awareness, mm-hmm. so it doesn't get out of control. So that, you know, you're not thinking of your ringing in your ears or the head noise 24/7. So you can't sleep, you can't socialize, you can't work, those types of things. And that's what we mean by that. But again, you have sudden onset of tinnitus. You need to be evaluated ASAP because it can be something life-threatening. And so we want you to know that that should happen and occur. Once you've realized that that's not the issue,
mm-hmm.
and it might be hearing loss, it might be other things. We just don't know. It might be just secondary again to head trauma or stroke or other things. You want to treat it. You want to start with working with someone like Dr. Schmidt, who specializes in tinnitus or tinnitus, that is going to look at that top-down model as well as the bottom-up, because it's that top-down that's going to decrease that awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to do that as soon as possible before all parts of the brain start to atrophy and change and reorganize.
So, yes, mm-hmm. definitely. Even with myself, when I developed tinnitus, I started working on it right away. Okay,
mm-hmm.
so I think a lot of people out there, if we start sooner, I think we might have better results
right.
At the
mm-hmm.
end. Okay,
mm-hmm.
rather than just having it linger for years and years and go, okay, finally, all right, let's do something about it. In my opinion, treating it sooner for most people, I think will have better results in the long run.
Yeah. Well, and okay, so now I'm going to disclose something that I haven't even told Dr. Schmidt yet. I now have tinnitus.
No.
I developed it probably about 4 or 5 months ago. And it was, and I noticed it at night. Well, at first, you know this, because I kept saying, don't you hear that high pitch?
Yeah.
Sound on the refrigerator
right.
at the office. And it was really bothering me. And then later on, it would go away. But what happened is later on when I'd lay down at night and it was very quiet, I would say, is that tinnitus or is that just it being quiet? And it took me about, I'm going to say about 5 days to realize it's probably tinnitus. But I know what you mean by your attention. I'm laying there, I'm tired, I should go to sleep, and all I can think about is that a ring? Is that a head noise? Is that a ringing in my ears? It doesn't really sound like a ringing, and it's really, really quiet. And so now I sleep with rain sounds on, and I don't hear it. But if that goes off, then I wake up, then I hear it again. So.
Okay, we'll so, have to
yeah.
work on you a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
But right. during the day, when I'm around and things are going on, it doesn't bother me.
Right.
It's, as you've always said, never being quiet. So
exactly. All right. So have we convinced you yet to treat your hearing loss and tinnitus right away due to the brain processing changes that you don't want to happen? If so, great, go treat it right now. If not, keep listening, okay? Let's discuss treating your hearing loss and how it can decrease your risk of falls. You know, you're thinking, are they really related? Is that really true? And so I'm here to say yes. Okay. So your inner ear is consists of a hearing mechanism and a balance mechanism together, and they are truly together, and they use the same fluids. So it does make sense that one side will affect the other.
Yeah. So just real briefly for those, I'm going to try to do a visual exercise. So if you're looking at the inner ear, you have the cochlea. That's that snail-shaped organ that's in the inner ear. And it, if I was to unwrap it, if you will, it would be, it's tonotopic, similar to keys on a piano, one side being bass, one side being treble, the middle being, the center being middle C. But it wraps like, and it looks like a snail.
Mm-hmm.
The cochlea is connected to three organs of the inner ear, which is the balance system. So if we look at the three organs or the three canals, one canal helps when we shake our head yes, one canal helps when we shake our head no, and one canal provides information when we move our head from side to side or ear to shoulder, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, within those canals are hair cells and fluid. And when you move, they react in an excited inhibitory type of response. So, for example, if I was to turn my head to the right horizontal canal excites, the left horizontal canal inhibits, and therefore I don't get dizzy when I turn my head to the right. Also within that inner ear system, there are the macule and the saccule, which is translational movement. So one is vertical and one is horizontal. So it helps detect movement in the vertical direction, i.e. laying, sitting, standing, and horizontal, moving forward, moving backwards, moving to one side, moving to the other. And then finally, you have that area that contains the, what we hate to say, crystals or ear rocks.
Right.
It's otoconia, and they are responsible for gravitational balance. So it allows you to bend forward off your center of gravity and not fall forward. So all of this, your hearing, your balance, your ability to dance on your head, be twirled around, look up under a desk or a car to, you know, that motion and not get dizzy, that all comes from the inner ear. And it's all connected. And so if there is damage to one part, it's very likely there's damage to the other area. So if there's damage in the cochlea, it's very possible there's going to be damage in the inner ear of that same ear or both. If there's damage in the inner ear, it's very possible you're going to have damage in that cochlea because it's literally the same end organ. And it feeds information up to the brain.
Right. And so, you know, in saying that, so as we age, we're not able to do some of the things that we used to do when we're younger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you're 80 years old and you're doing a cartwheel, oh my goodness, God bless you.
Yes. Okay.
Because that's pretty miraculous. So, you know, the hearing system changes over time, and so does the balance system. Okay. And visually, you can see this with people that, you know, aren't, you know, of the advanced age too. I think I've mentioned this before. If you look at a deaf individual, if I look at a deaf individual, I can tell they're deaf because they carry themselves differently. Okay. There's something about, and I can't pinpoint it really, there's something about their posture and the way that they move, just a little bit different. Okay. Because again, hearing and balance are hooked together. And so there's just something about that, that's different in the hearing person and in the deaf person. Just seeing patients over the years, I've had the experience of seeing a patient with hearing loss, and they were sitting there, you know, and their posture's not very good. But then all of a sudden, when we stimulate that system again, then with some hearing technology, you know, I can visually see their posture gets better. Mm-hmm. Nobody notices that, but I noticed that for some reason. Their posture, like, just instantly just changes. And it's a pretty amazing thing to see. And it's been very memorable to me. Those are some of the patients that I will always remember.
Yeah.
It's powerful. It's just a powerful thing just to know that, you know, we didn't always link the two, hearing and balance, even though anatomically they are connected. But in my brain, I always kind of separated them a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And now I'm seeing over time how they are truly connected with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only do you see that posture change, you see just, I don't even know how to describe it, but the ease of listening changes. Mm-hmm. They're not working so hard. Their face isn't grimaced, or, you know, right, they're trying to hear you. They're relaxed. So they, you know, their shoulders go back and, you know, their smile goes on their face. It really does, Kurt, listeners. It really does. I've seen it as well.
Right.
So, yeah. So how about now? Are you convinced to treat your hearing loss sooner rather than later? If not, let me give you just another reason. Treating your hearing loss increases social engagement. So let's go back to what we discussed in the beginning of the podcast. Your experiences affect the way the brain processes sound. If you allow yourself to communicate less with other people because it's difficult, then that changes the way your brain processes speech over time. So we talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
But what does it do for you socially? Okay, so, I used to love to go to my book club, but I don't anymore because it's so difficult to understand what they're saying when they're discussing the book.
Mm-hmm.
I used to like to go to my house of worship, but I don't anymore because I can't hear the pastor or the rabbi or the imam, and I just don't go. It's not pleasant anymore. That used to be my favorite restaurant, but I can't hear. I would love to go to my great-granddaughter's birthday party, but I can't. I can't hear. It's frustrating. I just sit in a corner. Nobody wants to age that way. That is not healthy aging.
Right.
Nobody wants to do that. And yet, we're allowing it ourselves to be put in those situations. I remember both my grandparents, who've been gone for a while, but always very, very active. And then as their hearing became worse and worse, they sat in a chair. And they only wanted adult visitors. And they only wanted one at a time.
Mm.
And that's really difficult to do.
Right.
It really is. So they don't have the relationship with their grandchildren or great-grandchildren. It puts usually one individual responsible for, you know, checking in on them, which creates a burden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't attend events, and when they do, they sit in a corner, and all they do is want to go home. That's not, that's just not healthy aging. And that's not, it's just not healthy. It just isn't.
Right. And that's changing that top-down processing over time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're allowing that to happen, you're allowing your brain to change, which typically you don't want it to. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you want it to stay intact. Also, from just a psychological and sociological perspective, we all need social engagement with other human beings, actual human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Our brain was built around this need, and without it, we begin to develop symptoms of anxiety and depression, along with a host of other issues. What we've learned from this COVID time is how important social engagement is.
Yes.
As those who struggled are having negative effects due to the lack of the social engagement. So we're seeing a whole lot of anxiety out there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because that social engagement was not at a level that a person was used to and accustomed to.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm also a little bit concerned now about how technology, so I don't know if people just have too much time on their hands. I think it's true. We're creating other worlds that aren't real,
mm-hmm.
that draw people into these worlds, and it doesn't allow for human socialization. It allows for technological sort of socialization, whatever that means. As I understand it, there's like internet rules that real people engage in, and they use real money for these fantasy worlds,
mm-hmm.
And they buy clothes in these fantasy worlds. And they buy property next to somebody's fantasy property because they're in that world. They were famous. I don't understand. They're not tangible to human life. They mm-hmm. are in a different world. And so, you know, come on, people, just stay in the real world and interact with real human beings.
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
This is what our brain was built for. Okay, it wasn't built to be in another world and not be socially engaging.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So do yourself a favor and stay in this world.
Great. I totally agree. I don't know about those internet rules, but now
yes.
I'm going to go find out more about that. I haven't heard that.
Crazy.
Yeah.
One is called Minecraft.
Oh, really?
Yes, my grandchildren play that. It's just mind-boggling.
Oh.
I tried to play with them, and I was lost. I was just trying to learn how to walk through the world, and they were building houses and going in a boat and looking for sheep, and I'm like, what is this?
Oh, yes. My goodness.
And you're right, Susan. It's like they get lost in this world, and they buy things, they share things, they steal things, and I'm like, I am just so out of it.
Oh yeah,
that's a whole different world.
Yes,
that's a little scary.
Yeah,
and probably associate. You know, I just going totally off topic, but the lack of socialization. It's not just the hearing impaired. The pandemic has proven that
everybody.
We all need it. Mm-hmm. And if anybody is in question, talk to your kids or grandkids, teachers, and schools. They are in a world of hurt right now, trying to get these kids back in and socialize with each other and get along and mm-hmm. understand that you have to be respectful of the person sitting next to you or standing next to you. It's unbelievable what we're seeing just right. at the level of school with these kids now returning this year. It's been... I have a friend who's a teacher, and she said, it's been the worst year ever. Just because these our young kids miss so much mm-hmm. in that maturity and how to connect with people and how to problem solve and how to critical think through things. And so it's not just hearing loss. So yeah, if they're, yeah, get into the real world, folks. We really need you there.
Right. Those good old days, we had to call people. It's like,
nobody calls anymore.
I know. So just, you know, get out there, engage with other human beings. It is good for your brain, whether you have hearing loss, whether you don't. If you're a human, it's good for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So hopefully we convinced you that these are the, you know, some of the reasons, not even all of them, but these are some of the reasons that you should treat your hearing or your balance issues or your tinnitus sooner than later.
Correct.
Okay? Don't let your brain start to reorganize. Just deal with it and treat it and everything will flow more smoothly.
Absolutely. So we're going to move on to our tips and tricks. Just a reminder, a diagnosis of diabetes, heart disease, cognitive decline, kidney disease, cancer, and the use of chemo drugs and other things can lead you at greater risk for hearing loss. So it's very important that if you have any of these diagnoses, that you have your hearing checked annually to monitor your hearing for threshold changes and, if needed, treat your hearing loss. And one of the things we didn't mention about the connection between hearing loss and falls, risk of falls, is if you are one that wants to stay at home, age at home, when the number one thing that takes you out of your home is falls.
Mm-hmm.
So again, don't be afraid to say, hey, I'm going to go get my hearing checked. And if I have to, I will treat my hearing loss because it is that important to me that I age well and I age at home. And now our quote of the day comes from Helen Keller. When she was asked, if you could have your sight back or your hearing back, what would you choose? And her comment was, blindness cuts us off from things, but deafness cuts us off from people. And that kind of goes into what we were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think we could all apply that to hearing loss and social isolation that we were just discussing. So we readily treat our vision, but on average wait 7 or more years to treat our hearing loss. We want to treat our hearing loss so that we can keep that connection with people.
Absolutely. So I'd like to thank my colleague, Dr. Susan Schmidt, for joining me today. And I'd like to also thank you, our listeners, for joining us and for being here with us. And a reminder, if you have any questions for us at ABHA, please post them on our Facebook page or email us at questions@arizonabalance.com. That's questions at Arizona, spelled out, balance.com. And also, don't forget to hit the subscribe button, as we are always talking about different topics and you don't want to miss any of our future episodes.
And for a free copy of Dr. Day's book, Re-Engage with Life and Family, visit our website at azbalanceandhearing.com. So Arizona is abbreviated to azbalanceandhearing.com, and click the box requesting a free copy. Or you can call our office at 602-265-9000 and request a free copy that way. Just let our exceptional staff know that you heard it on our podcast today.
Remember, hearing care is health care, and treating your hearing loss is the number one modifiable risk factor for reducing your risk of developing dementia. Treating your hearing loss has also been shown to reduce your risk of falls, decrease the experience of tinnitus, increase your social engagement, and decrease depression. Don't put it off any longer. We'd like to thank Robin, our producer, and Dave Pratt's Worldwide Networks for allowing us to record in the studio. And again, you, our listeners, thank you. ABHA, partnering with you to better balance,
better hearing,
better life.
Thank you for listening to the ABHA Listen and Learn podcast with Dr. Dana Day and Dr. Susan Schmidt. Join us next time as we discuss the latest issues related to hearing and balance healthcare. Plus, hear any of our past episodes on demand 24/7 on StarWorldwideNetworks.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.